Without objection, the previous question is ordered. The question is on adoption of the resolution. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it, and the resolution is agreed to. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
The Republican National Convention opened yesterday afternoon with a floor fight over rules led by delegates opposed to Donald Trump. The theme of the night was Make America Safe Again, and it featured speakers who criticized Hillary Clinton for her handling of the terror attacks in Benghazi. In a heartrending speech, Patricia Smith, whose son Sean was killed in Benghazi, blamed Hillary Clinton for her son's death, calling her a murderer who should be in prison.
I blame Hillary Clinton personally for the death of my son. That's personally. In an email to her daughter shortly after the attack, Hillary Clinton blamed it on terrorism. But when I saw Hillary Clinton, she sure is. She sure is. She lied to me and then called me a liar.
The keynote speaker was Melania Trump talking about her husband, and it looks like portions of her speech were taken from a speech Michelle Obama gave in 2008 at the Democratic Convention. We asked Dick Pullman to join us in this portion of Radio Times, a national political columnist for WHYY's Newsworks. In fact, is in Cleveland and has been reporting for WHYY throughout the week. And Dick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
How are you, Marty?
I'm very well. This is not your first convention. In fact, Dick, you've been to many conventions. Anything unusual about yesterday's either opening day or opening night?
Yeah. I mean, well, the afternoon was, as you just, the clip you just played, the sort of sudden tumult that broke out, angry voices. I mean, you never hear this kind of discord on the floor of a convention anymore. I mean, this is my ninth. And virtually all of them, with the possible exception of the very first one I did, have been extremely sedate and very highly choreographed and scripted and in, you know, virtual infomercials of unity. And this one got off to a completely different start because, you know, anti-Trump people were trying to get a roll call vote on the floor of, you know, this notion that they want to be able to vote their conscience when they vote for a nominee. And that was basically taken down by what they call strong arm tactics and worse. They called it worse than that, actually. And then the Trump people were chanting USA, USA at them. And so this is just a very unusual. And I think it's basically a sign that the play of the show of unity is really just a show. And there's just a lot of grumbling and worse underneath.
But do you think, Dick, this is the end of the end Trump or dump Trump movement or faction of the Republican Party?
Well, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a move on Thursday night to, let me correct myself. I believe the roll call vote for the nomination, I think it's today or tonight. And I believe there'll probably be a move to try to do it by acclamation. So what's going to be interesting is to see whether there are attempts to dissent from that. There were scattered reports that some people might walk off the floor in protest of the nomination. The nomination will carry. But underneath the surface, you know, you just hear a lot of grumbling. And it's reflected in the national polls anyway. I mean, there's a new poll out from NBC News Wall Street Journal, which is a bipartisan poll conducted by a Democratic pollster and a Republican pollster. And they just reported that only 38% of Republicans are satisfied with their own nominee. So that's a serious problem. And so, you know, regardless of what the convention puts on screen, I think the underlying fundamentals are problematical.
Well, the theme of last night was Make America Safe Again. And we heard a lot of people, including this Patricia Smith, this mother of Sean Smith, who was killed in Benghazi, criticizing Hillary Clinton. The fact checkers have been busy with this. And it, there's, you know, obviously her pain is palpable, and one can't watch that without feeling some degree of agony that she is in. But there is some question about what Hillary said to whom, and whether she was saying different things to different people. How much do you think, though, this Benghazi issue is going to be a theme of the Republicans going forward?
Right. Well, you know, most of the people who are seriously invested in Benghazi being a Hillary Clinton scandal, are people in the Republican base who would never vote for her under any circumstances. So they're already invested in that to that extent, despite the fact that there have been 8 or 9 congressional committee reports that, you know, have, found no so-called smoking gun involved with respect to Hillary Clinton's role. So most Americans who are watching this are not up to speed or at this point even caring about the details of Benghazi. However, a mother's pain is a palpable thing to put on television.
Absolutely.
All of us who are parents. Yeah, all of us who are parents can relate. But I think the larger thing that they're doing there potentially, and whether it works or not, we'll see, is, you know, there is this sort of larger perception among many people, even some swing voters, about Hillary Clinton not being honest and fair dealing. And, you know, the FBI email investigation sort of plays into that. So even though people may not be, focused on Benghazi, I think the byproduct of last night's message was just to try to sort of remind people that there are questions being asked about Hillary Clinton's veracity generally. And so, if they are going to win this fall, they have to, I think, try to hit that hard as a character issue.
I wonder, too, when I watched most of the convention last night, there was a message of fear, a message of danger, a message of being very afraid. There were people talking about family members who've been the victims of immigrant violence or immigrant crime. How do you think that plays beyond Cleveland, Dick?
Well, fear can be a motivator for voters. The law and order theme, which everybody was hitting hard and which Trump has hit hard, that brings me back to 1968. You know, it was a successful tactic for Richard Nixon. And, there's a question of whether it can work in the same way again, particularly since about 90% of the 1968 electorate was white. Mm-hmm. And this time it's going to be experts think it's going to be maybe 68-69%. So you have a much more diverse electorate. And so the fear thing, which is, the subliminal of the fear message is that, it's like white grievance and white fear. And I don't know if it's going to have the same resonance, but it's visceral. It can be viscerally powerful if successful. And Republicans historically, at least in our era, are often very successful at visceral messaging.
Let me play, and this is something actually the New York Times put together for us, and it's comparing parts of Melania Trump's speech last night during the Republican National Convention and putting them side by side with a speech that Michelle Obama gave back in 2008 at the Democratic National Convention. It's about a minute and a half. Let's give it a listen, and then, Dick, I'll ask you about it.
Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values, like you work hard for what you want in life.
From a young age, my parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life.
That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do. That you treat people with dignity and respect, even if you don't know them and even if you don't agree with them.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise. That you treat people with respect. They taught and showed me values and morals in their daily life.
And Barack and I set out to build lives guided by these values and to pass them on to the next generation.
That is a lesson that I continue to pass along to our son. And we need to pass those lessons on to the many generations to follow.
Because we want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
Because we want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
Jason Miller, senior communications advisor for the Trump campaign, wrote last night in writing her beautiful speech, Melania's team of writers took notes on her life's inspirations and in some instances included fragments that reflected her own thinking. Melania's immigrant experience and love for America shone through her speech, which made it such a success. Dick, how do you hear and how do you read these two speeches, certainly back to back?
Yeah, and I just wrote a quick column this morning about this and did some of the same comparisons. So I'm familiar with this. You know, the part of the problem was that, if you actually read them, the passages, or as you just heard them, but I put them, into a column. And when you read back and forth, it's not just fragments. You know, they're like entire passages that are almost word to word from what Michelle Obama had in 2008. And the problem here, I think, is that, for weeks we were hearing that Melania was working on this speech, for many weeks, and that she was writing it herself. I mean, that was kind of what they were putting out. They raised the bar on this thing quite high. And then it turns out that, copy and paste was, one of their chief allies here. Paul Manafort, the campaign manager, campaign chief, was also out there, spinning this thing and saying, well, the two speeches had, in his words, common words. And it's not common words. It's, it's entire passages, big sentence chunks. This isn't going to be probably a big story, maybe even by the end of today. But it's another example, along with what happened yesterday on the floor, that, they can't seem to get out of their own way. These are the kind of, you don't want these narratives out there getting in the way of your core message of unity and competence and everything else. And, obviously Twitter is a very, snarky vehicle, and it's just been sort of, aflame, of course, for the last 12 hours, with all of this. And, having Melania quoting JFK and things like that.
Well, we're going to end on that note. Dick Pullman, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times, and have fun today.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. National political columnist for Newsworks. He is in Cleveland and has been reporting for WHYY throughout the week. And we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. In fact, we have a new guest waiting in the wings, Matt Katz from WNYC, talking about Donald Trump and Chris Christie. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Matt Katz spent several years covering Chris Christie, wrote a book about him called American Governor. He's now covering Donald Trump for WNYC and for New Jersey Public Radio, and he's in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention. Christie was on Trump's short list for VP, and it was clear he really wanted the job. Instead, Donald Trump chose the governor of Indiana, Mike Pence, to be his running mate. Matt Katz joins us to fill us in on what has been happening in Cleveland, and also we want to talk about this relationship between Trump and Christie. And Matt, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Good morning.
Good morning. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Anything that catches your eye and ear that's been going on in Cleveland. So, Matt, what have you been doing in Cleveland?
Well, I've been following Christie around and also on the floor last night with the New Jersey and New York delegations watching Rudy Giuliani and then Donald Trump come out in a silhouette and a stream of smoke to introduce his wife, Melania, who gave a pretty well-received speech, but as we know now, right, a little bit plagiarized.
Well, let me ask you about Chris Christie. I do believe he is speaking tonight. You have covered him extensively, Matt. Just how much did he want this VP job?
He wanted it. I mean, he was trying to lobby Trump's people in the waning days as the decision was being made to try to make his case. He was a bridesmaid last time, as you remember, when Mitt Romney put him on the short list for vice president in 2012. And this time he really thought that he might get the gig. He was the first major establishment Republican to endorse Trump right after he dropped out of the presidential race himself back in February. And he has been really defending Trump. I call it Trump-splaining when he goes on national TV and is tasked with trying to explain away some of Trump's most controversial remarks. He was doing it this morning even to try to explain why Trump's wife plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech. So he really was an important asset to the campaign. He became the campaign, the transition team chairman for a eventual Trump White House. He's the guy who's developing policy and figuring out who's going to be in the cabinet. And he was in a position to really become the running mate. But amazingly enough, what appears to have really scuttled his nomination was not Bridgegate. There's a trial coming up in September, or the fact that his approval rating in New Jersey is about 26%, which is terrible. It was because Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump's husband, so this is Donald's son-in-law, has some bitterness toward Christie because 12 years ago now, when Christie was U.S. attorney, he put Jared Kushner's father in prison. Jared Kushner's father, Charlie Kushner, was a major Democratic fundraiser, the biggest Democratic fundraiser in the state of New Jersey, and he engaged in a number of campaign violations, and he also hired a prostitute to try to blackmail a cooperating witness. So there's a lot of bitterness from the Kushner clan against Christie, and that appears to be what swayed Trump away from Christie and toward Mike Pence.
And
is what Christie called it this morning.
What did he call it? I'm sorry, Matt. What did he call it this morning?
He called it Shakespearean. He said, I know the reporters like to talk about this controversy and like to describe it as Shakespearean, but, you know, there's nothing. He really poo-pooed it. He said he has warm relations with Jared Kushner, but that's contrary to a lot of what sources have been telling reporters over the last week.
And it certainly underscores the power that Donald Trump's children and perhaps in-laws have in his campaign.
Oh, absolutely. And particularly his daughter, Ivanka. She appears to be really his closest advisor. And obviously, her husband is Jared. And Jared has assumed something of a quasi-campaign manager role. He's a developer and owns a newspaper in New York, but has really become an extremely important political advisor to Trump. And it does seem that the family, more so than anybody else, has more of Trump's ear.
Well, I talked to Dick Pullman, and we played a kind of A-B between Michelle Obama and Melania Trump. You used the word plagiarism. How much do you think, Matt, this will hurt the campaign? Is this a one-day story? The Trump campaign is pushing back on this. How do you see this playing out?
You know, from a positive perspective for the Trump campaign, cable news, which really still drives much of the conversation in this country politically, can really only focus on one thing at a time. So the blanket coverage this morning has been about plagiarism. So what are we not talking about from last night? We're not talking about how a Trump surrogate, Congressman Steve King from Iowa, said that white non-whites, or as he called them, subgroups, have not contributed anything to Western civilization. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about how Scott Baio, an 80s TV star who somehow was elevated to this big convention speech last night, that he got off stage and called President Obama a Muslim. We're not talking about how the speeches last night were so, just over-the-top dark about how, the country's on the verge of ruin and that we're faced with this triple threat of illegal immigrants and Syrian refugee terrorists and police and cop killers, and the only way to stop this is to put Hillary Clinton in prison, which is something many speakers called for, and to elevate Donald Trump to the presidency. So there's a lot of it was a lot that happened at the convention last night that most Americans, but many Americans would be uncomfortable with, and we're not talking about that. Instead, we're talking about plagiarism, and that is something of maybe a good thing for Trump. And if the media talks about it so much, it could potentially help Trump, because he's able to say, look how the mainstream media does me dirty, and they just pull out some random thing that my poor wife did, and they blow it up just to kill Donald Trump. So, you know, it's a bad news moment for him right now, but it could be a lot worse.
I'm curious, Matt, how all those things you just said, how they played with the delegates that you've been hanging out with, whether from New York or New Jersey. And just to add to former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani says, you know, Donald Trump will secure our borders. His opponent has had her chance to do this, and she has failed. Hillary Clinton is for open borders. And PolitiFact said basically that claim was false. But how did that play among the delegates?
You know, the red meat does go over well in the room, and there's certainly legitimate concerns about terrorism and about the police shootings and the retaliation, apparent retaliatory shootings against police, and that's legitimate. And when people were hearing that, they were jumping out of their seats. I mean, Rudy Giuliani got an incredibly warm reception and from the New York and New Jersey and actually Florida delegations, which were all kind of sitting together. Really, I mean, people gave him several standing ovations. It was very fiery, a lot of red meat. But I will tell you that privately, particularly with the New Jersey delegation, when New Jersey is obviously a blue state, and Republicans in New Jersey are somewhat old school. They're Tom Kaine, remember former Governor Tom Kaine, who's a moderate Republican of days past. They're in that mold, and they tell you privately that they are concerned by Trump's controversial comments, and they're concerned about how they're going to grow their party in a diverse state, given that he has made so many controversial remarks about various demographic groups in the country. I mean, Chris Christie in 2013, when he ran for re-election, he won 51% of the Hispanic vote, and he did that because he in his first term, he went out into black and Hispanic communities. He signed a DREAM Act so immigrants who come here illegally as children, they can still go get in-state tuition at Rutgers and other state colleges. And the Hispanic community really appreciated that and rewarded him with a majority of their vote. And Republicans in New Jersey now are pretty concerned that they are becoming an old and white party, and it's being perpetuated, and it's because of the message that they're getting from Trump. And now at this convention, it's just the numbers prove it. One of six New Jersey congressmen who are Republicans are here. Just one have come to Cleveland. Three of 28 Republican assembly members have come to Cleveland. Three. That is an indication that many New Jersey Republicans are very uncomfortable with the top of their ticket.
And that's Matt Katz. He's covering the Republican National Convention for WNYC, our sister station in New York, and for New Jersey Public Radio, joining us in the second portion of Radio Times, talking about what's been happening in Cleveland. And again, you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Matt, I want to read a bunch of comments here, and you can add to the comments by sending them to Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me just read some comments here. An email from Gregory: the plagiarism was not accidental. The campaign is baiting the educated Michelle Obama to criticize Mrs. Trump from her intellectual high horse. A Facebook comment from James: I'd love to hear what a university English professor would say about this. Sure seems like dime store plagiarism to me. For Matt Katz: is Christie now angling for a cabinet position? If so, which one? And if I can give you a chance, Matt, to answer that question, do you know?
Yeah, you know, he says he's not spoken to Trump about any positions, and that very well may be the case. But, you know, there's a lot of punditry around this. I mean, we'd love to, at the bar late night at the New Jersey bar where all the delegates are staying, we'd love to muse about what Christie would be in a Trump administration. And the top two positions that people always talk about our attorney general. He would definitely be qualified for that because he was a U.S. attorney for 7 years in New Jersey. He certainly has the resume for that job, although there is some concern that if Trump wins the presidency and the Democrats have control over the Senate, that he would have a lot of trouble getting confirmed given the Bridgegate scandal and several other scandals. five of his former top officials have been indicted or pleaded guilty in various crimes since Bridgegate, so that could be a problem for him. The other suggestion for a Christie job in a Trump administration would be chief of staff. Huh? It would give him a good deal of power, and it would allow him to be a surrogate for the administration on, like, the Sunday shows and whatnot. So those are the chief possibilities. The snarky answer to this question, by the way, is Secretary of Transportation.
That is snarky, Matt. I mean, interestingly, Mitt Romney took a hard look at Chris Christie 4 years ago and passed on him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was concerned about some controversies from Christie's days as U.S. attorney, like giving some federal contracts to friends. He was also concerned, and this is interesting, about a federal rule that forbid Wall Street donors from making campaign donations to governors who are on presidential tickets. So because there are several Wall Street banks that have business with New Jersey government in terms of the pension funds or bond offerings, those New Jersey those Wall Street banks and their employees would be forbidden from making campaign donations. So Romney had actually asked Christie if he would resign as governor to get around this rule, and Christie said no. I'm told that in this case, if Trump did select Christie, the way they would have gotten around this rule of forbidding donations to sitting governors would have been for Christie to indeed resign. So, in fact, two things happened when Christie was not chosen as VP. He didn't become the running mate, and New Jersey kept him as governor for another year and a half.
Matt, we have a lot of comments. People are really latching on to the speech that Melania Trump gave last night. I wonder, though, whether it raises questions about just how organized a team Donald Trump has. And that has been one of the criticisms or even observations, that this is a campaign essentially that is run by Donald Trump himself with some help from the family, but not much beyond that.
Yeah, and there's plenty of indication that this is an extraordinarily disorganized campaign. I mean, the vice presidential rollout last week was evidence of that. The fact that apparently Mike Pence had thought he was going to be the running mate, and Trump at the last minute was maybe considering backing out of this. So this is something that Trump has denied but has been reported elsewhere. And then once he did announce Pence, they didn't have anything on the website. They didn't have any, you know, tweets ready to go. There were a whole range of things that a normal campaign would do in advance of rolling out a vice presidential running mate that the Trump campaign didn't do. I mean, it really does feel like sometimes they're flying by the seat of their pants. I mean, Trump has run zero television ads. He's done speeches in places that are not considered battleground states, so it doesn't make any sense for him to be devoting time and resources there. There are a whole range of questions about whether his campaign and some apparent dysfunction within the campaign is an indication of what kind of White House he would run. Mm. And I think that's a legitimate question. I don't know if it necessarily permeates into the electorate, though. I don't know if the average voter really will look at those two things, or if this is more just like inside politics.
Sure. Let me get James from Chester County to join us. And James, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Marty, love your show.
Thank you.
Yes, I just, along with the obvious reoccurring theme of fear, 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 I was struck by Giuliani's remark, his speech, and I just thought it was a perfect soundbite for ISIS with their lone wolf recruiting on the internet. They're moving from the battlefield where they're being defeated, and they're being more effective recruiting lone wolves, you know, via the internet. I just thought it was a perfect soundbite for that kind of thing. I thought it was so irresponsible, or such beyond irresponsible, rather, even for the Trump administration or Trump camp.
James, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me get one more caller on, and Matt, we're going to have to say goodbye to you in a couple of minutes. Hopefully we can get a couple more comments from you. This is Bob now, and Bob is joining us from Rittenhouse Square. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Great guest, great show.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I think Melania's speech, her big mistake, Matt said it may not hurt them. I think it's the whole reason why Trump is a disgrace, shouldn't be a candidate. I'll tell you why. Michelle Obama, on August 25th, 2008, I was there in Denver. When she said, you got to keep your word. Your word is your bond, and you got to respect others. And that's what Melania quoted last night. Well, you know what? That's exactly what Donald Trump never does. I'm an attorney. He owed me money. I did work for him. He told me I did a great job. He sneakily tried to give the bill to the Trump Plaza, and then when they didn't pay it, he tried to give it to the Convention Bureau. He told me he owned three hotels. They would pay it. Well, even though he told me he was going to pay me, he never paid me. There's 3,500 people that sued him because he doesn't keep his word and he has no respect for others.
Well, you know, Bob, just a quick question. Was that in Atlantic City? Where was that?
That was in Atlantic City. I did work for him. I didn't sue him because I didn't want to get in a pissing contest with a skunk. But I'm probably, if there's 3,500 people that sued him because he has no respect for others, because he doesn't keep his word, well, you know what? There's probably 50,000 that didn't sue him. And I think he's a disgrace to democracy.
Well, you know what, Bob?
Yes.
Let me put you on hold. We want to get your last name and how to get in touch with you. Let me give Matt Katz a chance to respond. I mean, that Matt, this opens up a big can of worms about Donald Trump's business practices. Anything you want to say in response to our caller?
I actually was pushing back against a delegate yesterday who talked about one of the reasons why she supported Trump was because he's a great businessman. And I said, what about, you know, all of these people like Bob here who said they have lost money because Trump didn't pay them or he didn't honor their contracts? And he said, that's just how the delegate told me. That's just how the big boys play. And they Trump supporters just say this is the way business is done. And Trump was good at doing business. So this is a line of attack that we've heard from Hillary and she'll continue to use through the fall. But Trump supporters, it doesn't seem to faze them, at least from those that I've spoken to about it.
Well, Matt, I'm going to let you get back to work there in Cleveland. Thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks a lot, Marty. See ya.
See ya. And Matt Katz in Cleveland and covering the Republican National Convention for WNYC and for New Jersey Public Radio. And do stay with us. We've got let me get my little notes here. We've got the head of the Republican Party in Delaware and in Pennsylvania who'll be joining us in this last portion of Radio Time. So do stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Donald Trump won big in Pennsylvania, winning all the counties in the Commonwealth, and did the same in Delaware earlier this spring. He's now on the cusp of being chosen to be the party's presidential nominee after an unconventional election season. And while he won millions of supporters, there are some notable absences at the convention in Cleveland. His candidacy has also divided the party. Will it be unified when the convention is over and the general election begins? We asked Charlie Copeland to join us, and he's chairman of the Republican Party of Delaware. And Charlie Copeland, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, it's a real pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Also with us, Rob Gleason, and he's the chairman of the Republican Party of Pennsylvania. And Rob Gleason, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for asking me.
Rob, how's it going so far?
Well, it's going great. Last night was very exciting. Melania Trump gave a wonderful speech, and Donald Trump surprised us by introducing her. And Rudy Giuliani gave an excellent speech on law and order and safety, and I thought that the convention crowd was euphoric about this and very excited. So it was a great first day here in Pennsylvania. We had Paul Ryan speak to us in the morning, and this morning we had Donald Trump Jr. speak to us. So Pennsylvania is in the sights of the Trump family.
Indeed it is. To you, Charlie Copeland, Melania Trump's speech has come under a lot of criticism. In fact, earlier in the hour, we played her speech next to Michelle Obama's speech, finding a lot of similarities there. Is this a problem for the Trump campaign?
I don't think it's a problem for the Trump campaign at all. So two spouses of presidential candidates love their husbands and express that. And she's going to be the first lady. Remember back in 1988, Joe Biden, who was now vice president.
That's right.
Not only was it close, he basically plagiarized almost word for word Neil Kinnock's speech. I don't think that, I think the first lady gave a great speech. And if we're going to go about, who was, stealing lines from whom, I think Joe Biden has a lot more to talk about than Melania Trump.
Well, yeah, I mean, he certainly suspended his campaign back then, Charlie, and never was able to at least become president of the United States.
He had a brain aneurysm. he had a brain aneurysm. That's why he suspended back in 88.
Ah, interesting, interesting. But I have to say, perhaps it's the news du jour. It's all over my website here, and people want to call in. It's all over the TV. Do you think, Rob Gleason, this is the story du jour, and then it will move on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's much ado about nothing. It really didn't mean anything. I mean, there's only so many ways you can say something, and it just happened to be, I think, coincidental. I mean, I can't even believe that a speechwriter, if she had one, or Melania, would copy Michelle Obama's speech. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Let me ask you about Giuliani, and I'll put this to you, Rob Gleason. He gave a really impassioned speech last night, talking a lot about the dangers that face the country, talking about immigration, talking about securing the borders, terrorism as well. What is he saying to Republicans? What is he saying to the country?
Well, he sounded like a presidential candidate, which he was at one time, and he was saying to the country that we have a huge problem right now, which I think the country knows. And even myself, I can't believe that we would have 8 police officers have been killed in the last 10 days or so. So, you know, I think that he is saying to the country that there's one man that can straighten this out, and it's Donald Trump. And Rudy Giuliani has a great pedigree, and he's an expert on this. And you know, the people believe him, and not just the crowd there, but I think people of the United States believe him. I mean, he is the man when it comes to homeland security type of things.
Well, let me turn to you, Charlie Copeland. Then based on yesterday's theme, which was Make America Safe Again, what specifically would a President Trump do to make this country safer, whether domestically or internationally?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that he's laid out from the get-go, and one is protect our borders. We're all from immigrants, and we all want legal immigration. We want to control that flow so we know who's coming in, so that they're people that want to be an American, that they want to learn our culture and our society and assimilate and make us richer both in diversity and in culture. But you got to protect and you got to have it controlled. And then I think he will be supportive, more supportive of what the generals have asked for in the way of materiel, equipment, and personnel. We know that President Obama could not get a status of force agreement in Iraq, which created a vacuum, which led directly to the rise of ISIS and therefore now all the problems we're having in the Middle East, including the growth of these sort of lone wolf attackers. I think that he will, by actually working with the military, create better strength and protection overseas and protecting the border, keeping those folks from coming into this country.
Rob Gleason, the same question to you. Donald Trump has talked about defeating ISIS. He's talked about waterboarding, bringing that back. And some of the military people are saying, oh, no, you won't. How do you see him as someone who can keep this country safe again?
Well, he's not afraid to govern, and you know, it's amazing. One time I was talking to Chris Christie, and I said, you know, what is it? What do you really need to be able to do to be an effective chief executive of a state or the nation? He said, you can't be afraid to govern, and I think that's where we come with Donald Trump. He'll listen to the generals. He's going to build up the armed services. We've let our guard down there. But, you know, domestically, too, you know, the president has said to the police departments that he doesn't want them running tanks and wearing vests and carrying big weapons because it inflames people. But what has that brought us is a bunch of deaths. And even those poor fellas in Dallas, you know, they didn't wear their vests because they were trying to be nice to the Black Lives Matter gang. So I think all that's going to start to disappear. And I think under a Trump administration, there will be a lot more support for police departments, better training, working hard and for our domestic security. I mean, you know, we talk about it. It's a thin blue line. When I went down to the convention last night, I wasn't worried because I saw there were a lot of policemen there and they were protecting me. And that's what I expect from them. So I think that Donald Trump will be in his administration. It's going to be a big job, but it's not only domestically that he's going to have to bring law and order. And he said, I'm the law and order candidate now. But also internationally is a very difficult thing, too. And it's not going to happen overnight. That's what scares me, because we've had sequester for years, and we've let our guard down when it comes to the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, and we have a long way to go. So, but I think that the message is getting across to Americans is that if you want to continue the way Obama's been doing it, then you'll elect Hillary Clinton. I mean, if it's on her watch, a lot of these things have happened. But if you want to change, if you want to change in Washington, if you want to change in the way we are doing things, you're going to go for Donald Trump. The line is becoming more clear every day.
About policing, and I think everyone in this country is just horrified the fact that police officers have been murdered and, frankly, assassinated while they are doing their jobs. But it's interesting, a lot of police commissioners, including former commissioner here in Philadelphia, Chief Ramsey, talked about community policing, saying that's really the direction we need to go in order to deal with the problems of crime in our country. What do you say in response to that, Charlie Copeland?
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you have a relationship with the citizenry that you are helping to keep safe and secure, there's more trust, right? I mean, when you reach out to somebody and you create that bond of trust, to quote Melania's speech from last night, you create an opportunity for the neighborhood to work with the police rather than viewing them as some force from outside. And that's not easy. And there are cities that have done it better, and there are cities that have done it worse. I mean, Dallas was actually doing quite well on that, but because of the national scene and issues in other cities, it got a guy who's clearly got some problems and sent him off, and he killed those officers. So I think things like community policing, any way that you can create a bond between the police force and their communities, is a good one. I mean, we have a police officer in Newark, Delaware, who went out one day with a sign saying free hugs, and he and a couple of his officers were going up and down the street, Main Street in Newark, giving hugs, and it became a viral video because it's that kind of thing. They're humans. They're humans like everybody else, and they want their community safe, and they want to work with people, and we need to get back to that rather than this divisive dialogue about, well, if they don't act stupidly or what have you. I think that there's a lot we can do. Community policing would certainly be a step to that.
Rob Gleason, let me go back to you. And it's clear the two Bush presidents are not in Cleveland, nor is Condoleezza Rice, nor is Mitt Romney, not John McCain. There are a number of other high-profile Republicans who are not in Cleveland to be part of this convention. And as you well know, there have been some high-profile Republicans who've been very critical of Donald Trump as a candidate, saying he doesn't really represent our party. He doesn't represent the autopsy that we did a couple of years ago to be more welcoming to a more diverse Republican Party. What's your response to that?
Well, they're wrong because they don't represent our party. Now, obviously, the Bushes have abdicated any type of leadership they have for the Republican Party. I'm the leader of the Republican Party in Pennsylvania. We have 3.3 million Republicans, and they are going to be marching together for Donald Trump. And I worked hard for the Bushes and for Mitt Romney and John McCain, and it's very disingenuous of them not to be supportive of our nominee or our party. At least they could have said nothing. Jeb Bush is a huge disappointment. He lost fair and square. There were 17 candidates. Donald Trump won. I am giving no quarter to those people, and we won't forget about Jeb Bush. I would say his career is over. So, listen, we have a party. We have a platform. We nominated Mr. Trump fair and square. We need to get behind him and try to elect him. I have supported over the years, and I've been many, many years a political activist, and I've held my nose many times in supporting people. But I'm a Republican, and I support Republicans. So it's not a good thing. It doesn't matter. Donald Trump is the type of candidate, doesn't need endorsements. George Bush and the Bush family aren't going to hurt him, or Mitt Romney. They had tried to derail him. They couldn't do it. It's the people. He's the people's candidate. That's the big difference this time. That could have hurt. Probably a Mitt Romney would have sunk him if the Bushes wouldn't be for him. But this is a bit different now. Donald Trump is moving ahead, and I'm happy he's our nominee. But I'm not so sure he needs any of those people to help him.
Well, do you Charlie Copeland, the same kind of question. And there have been, over the last year, comments that Donald Trump made about John McCain essentially denigrating his 5 years as a POW. He certainly insulted Jeb Bush. He insulted Carly Fiorina when they were running for this office. How do you, is there something that would be off too far that he would say? Or is this just Donald Trump and we have to take him with a grain of salt?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think, Marty, that's a great question. So, one of the complaints that I think Republicans have had about President Obama is that he's very petulant, that when he thinks something isn't going his way, he kind of gets a little bit, petulant about it and dismissive of the other side and throws up straw men and says, these people are whatever. And I think that Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney and a bunch of these others are somewhat being petulant. They lost their race and they're feeling, I didn't get to, do whatever and I didn't win. And so I'm going to take my marbles and I'm going to go home.
In fact, that was the word used to describe John Kasich.
And I look at it and say, if you want to have an influence and an impact on the convention and on the future of the Republican Party, where do you go? You go to the convention where the delegates nationwide from Pennsylvania, from Delaware, from Utah, from California are all there talking all day long. And you're missing that opportunity because you lost the election, because you don't like something that he said. I think that is the definition of petulance. And if I'm going to call out the president for that, I ought to call out my own guys from that to be intellectually honest and consistent. And so I will. I agree with Chairman Gleason from Pennsylvania that they should come and they should join the conversation or they should just, keep their mouths shut and stay home.
A lot of people that want to join the conversation, sadly, almost no time to take it. Here's an email comment. How does Trump affect the down ticket? Does he have coattails to help? I'll put that to you, Rob Gleason. And interesting, our own Senator Pat Toomey is not in Cleveland. Is Trump going to be helpful to Republicans down ballot?
No, absolutely. I mean, what has happened here, a lot of these decisions were made about running and not running and worrying about Trump were made many moons ago. Now that he's leading in the polls and he's showing a lot of strength in the big primary, showing a lot of strength all over the state, he is going to help the down ticket big time. And we are pretty amazed about the support that he is receiving, not only from Republicans, but from Democrats and independents. I mean, Quinnipiac shows him up by 2 or 3 points. And there's a million more Democrats in Pennsylvania, and he's up by 3 points. I mean, this has to be very scary to the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania, and it has to be euphoric for all the Republicans. So I noticed that we have several of our congressmen are here at the convention, and they were been at the luncheons with all our luncheons, and they're being supportive of Mr. Trump. So. It's amazing. I have always said a day can be a lifetime in politics. In this case, it's been 6 months. It's been a lifetime.
I was going to say, it feels like a lifetime. I hear you. Well, on that note, we have to say goodbye to both of you. Rob Gleason, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Chairman of the Republican Party of Pennsylvania. Charlie Copeland, thank you for joining us as well.
It was a real pleasure, Marty. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And he's the chairman of the Republican Party of Delaware. And that's it for this first hour of Radio Times. But do stay with us. Much more about the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. And I see a lot of people still want to join the conversation, so don't go away. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.